conscript to destroy their main target. One of the principal techniques of their sabotage of the other, that the Jew undergoes, is to attempt to erode the masculine opposition gradually, and over time, and this through all manner of insidious techniques such as the introduction of effeminizing ideologies, and correlative lifestyle practices and various forms of drugs and alcohol as means of weakening the mind, body and soul of the male demographic. The resultant product of this erosion procedure, erosion of masculinity, is the bitter cuck, the kosher conservative cuck, he who purports to be manly, and to protect and defend society is now transitioning to the bitter cuck role serving the Jewish multicultural matrix prison society and as a kingle of its opponents. Thus, though not a completely effeminized figure, the cuck servitor who sells his soul to the Jew and turns against his own race is merely transitioning to the status of a totally effeminized cuck. Nonetheless, he plays the role of a bitter cuck, a second fiddle to the Jew, and to the Jew's non-white slaves. This figure is in a way more pathetic one, though more redeemable than the flaming fag leftist gender-bender race mixer, but nonetheless is still transitioning in the direction towards an even more pathetic status. This figure fails to play his proper role as a protector and defender of his own race, and fails, perhaps more importantly, to transcend the chaos of the world, and to give combat against the proper enemy. Perhaps this is because he does not know who the real enemy is, or perhaps he is simply too cowardly, too far gone to be able to redeem himself from his fallen state. Regardless, the remains of bitter cuck and continues to go the way of all flesh, through failed opportunities to oppose the enemy. Whether it be ignorance, or lack of courage, it is a transition unto death with the downgoing of the current of the demiurge. Only those who have sufficient fortitude, sufficient remnants of masculine virtues to oppose the genocide of their own race. Those who can't acknowledge the genocide agenda are cucks of the lowliest and weakest stamp, and those who can't acknowledge it can't oppose it. The evidence is more than clear at this time, and necessitates action in defense of one's own. Failure to act is effeminate when one knows what must be done and has the means to do it, the very definition of incontinence according to Aristotle. In his Unsophistical Refutations he says, "When a man has a goal and the means to it, straightway he acts. Failure to act is incontinent, cowardice, impotence of action and failed masculinity. Those who fail to act are effeminate beta cucks deserving of castration, though for physical kind, as they have already allowed themselves to be castrated spiritually." Metaphysics of Sex. Julius Evola, in his work The Metaphysics of Sex, propounds a path and compass with which to navigate this path in the realm of sexuality. This is the path of Olympians of Regnity, the transcendency of the lower states of consciousness, of the samsaric consciousness or beast consciousness trapped in the lower drives and beholden to phenomena. The involution of man is a result of his involvement in the lower status of consciousness, and it is the sexual act specifically which exerts the greatest magnetic influence, in pulling his soul earthward, rendering him an earthbound soul chained to the material plane. The paths to tread are as follows. 1. He may follow the path of degeneracy, going the way of all flesh towards the abyss, attaching his higher, true self to phenomena, and under the facade of a greater potency, a virility in the purely animal sense, render himself impotent in the true sense of a spiritual virility, squandering his life force and energies in dissipation in the act of stimulation of the lower senses. Gluttony, lust, living solely in the animal state, seeking one momentary pleasure after another, and losing himself in the welter of samsaric chaos. With regards to sexuality, he will not only expend his life force, but he will enable the atrophy of his true self through such an attachment. The addiction to sex leads to an ever-increasing obsession with pursuing stimuli of an ever-increasing intensity. This is the path into the abyss, the downgoing into the realm of samsara. Such is the path of what calls itself progress today, the progress towards the extinction and disintegration of the soul such that it can be vampirized by the entities who infest this earth, and their material agents with whom they are bound, namely the Jews, and their Shabbos Goya cult affiliates, the Freemasons and other Illuminati and their Goyim slave class, especially Christians. These are the urchins of the world order who orchestrate its madness, and seek to precipitate the destruction of the white race. They alone who possess the divine spark, and are capable of transcending the welter of samsara, the material plane, unlike the beastmen and Jews who are confined there, and have no attachment to any higher principle of consciousness, and who thus follow their natural tendencies, that of the autochthonous peoples, of the peoples of the earth, those who are born of the earth. To follow this path is to follow the path of modernity into the grave, and, rather than to surf the Kali Yuga, the evil tide of the demiurge, is to allow oneself to be washed down the drain with the current of lowest density, the downward spiral towards extinction. This is the reason why the Jinnozidal Jew insists upon imposing his machinations via degenerative culture. Sex in conjunction with the soul-destroying nostrums of drugs, bestial rhythmic magic, and what is represented as art, especially of a sexualized and hedonistic variety. This is designed to connote and denote the involvement in the lower drives of the spectator, an art form that is merely the architecture of destruction engineered by the Cabal One, that entails a participation and interaction on the most visceral level, pulling the experiencer into itself in a satanic menagerie of destruction, both aesthetic and sensational in the most concrete sense of effect, of consciousness-shifting experience. This is the path of destruction the Jews and their affiliated evil agents, and beyond themselves their masters, demonic spirits, wish the Goyim to head down to become Goyim in the sense of beast consciousness, just as Pinocchio in Pleasure Island was tempted to follow the path of self-destruction like Lampwick in Pleasure Island, transforming himself into a donkey through forsaking his higher true self. The Jews intend all of their slaves to become Lampwicks, transitioning into beast consciousnesses and becoming Goyim in the real sense of debased souls who have attached themselves to matter in their pursuits of momentary stimulation. Sex, drugs and crack rocks and bankroll all to the tune of the Pied Piper Jew, the tune of lower rhythmic animal music, that of the dens of iniquity called bars, and the whited sepulchres called churches, playing their Christian rock and rap music, etc. The second path is the one the white race was forced to tread at the point of a sword, and the threat of damnation by the priestly caste parasites, a threat they were not entitled to make good upon, as they were not in a position of authority to determine the fate of others, fate or destiny which is of their own making, and is decided by God. The Piscean age of Semitic pathos counterbalanced with extreme brutality, torture and murder still lingers like a bad smell, the corpse of the old eon still exerting its influence on the consciousness of the population. This age barred sexual activity is a sin of the flesh, of what was called God-totich, clean or employ the body in any acts of a sexual nature, is portrayed as sin, and has an attached punishment such that the sinner must cease committing his sin, in other words he must not involve himself in fornication outside of the priestly approved nuptials, which made of sexual conduct an act of evil, or a violation of God. Yet, quite the contrary, it is merely a faculty and activity of humans who use it for good, or ill in the higher spiritual sense of developing the higher, true self. This was the legacy of Abrahamic religion, and its influence on the population, creating all manner of sexual neuroses and inhibitions such that the people lived a life that was subject to an inner chaos, which in turn was the result of an outer restraint of natural impulses which, rather than being transmuted for higher purposes, were instead inhibited and suppressed, creating extreme inattention and concomitant blockages of the chakras and energy imbalances in the body and soul. The thesis of Christian Abrahamic inhibition is posited over and against the antithesis of liberal exhibitionism, both of which create a dynamic tension that leads to a recognition of the falsehood of both paths, both leading to the abyss only by different routes, one the right, the other the left, and both bordering the upward path out of the abyss, that being the wet path of tantric alchemy, of kundalini yoga, of the path of the development of the soul through an active engagement, a spiritual virility, a path leading upwards to the summit of the mountaintop of spiritual enlightenment, the empowerment of the true self over and against the atrophy of the true self via Abrahamic inhibition, or the dissipation of the true self via a life of excess stimulation. The path of the integral man, and that of the fallen man, those who follow the path of truth and those who follow the path of falsehood. Females, far be it from the writer to take it upon himself to dictate a course of conduct for women, but the writer nevertheless feels it to be an imperative to at least discourse upon the topic of females in general, and women in particular, to enable the reader to understand how he must relate to them, and to understand their behavioral psychology, their mentality, motives, and mechanisms of action. For further elaboration, the writer refers to his work Bitch, Women, Effeminacy and White Survival, to gain greater insight into the modalities of women. That the goal is imminent transcendence implies a detachment from the snares of worldliness and the vessel of lust, that is, woman especially must be handled in a manner consistent with this goal. He must look upon woman as a fellow sentient creature and creator, offspring of the Most High, and must behave in a manner cordial and accommodating, but not to a fault, to the point reasonable and consistent with the development and maintenance of the higher self in its detachment from the modern world and its active battle against it. Such is spiritual virility and Olympian serenity, a transcendence over the base drives, and not allowing them to tear one down to a depth of chthonic telluric beast consciousness. At the same time, this does not imply an ascetic rejection of sexual activity as spoken of in the Discourse on the Metaphysics of Sex herein contained, but rather an appropriate choose of sex as a consciousness-developing practice in the mode of a tantric alchemical working, and thus not purely as a selfish endeavor, but as a means of facilitating the transmutation of the consciousness of the woman, and indeed of the entire racial soul in its harmonization with the divine will. Creating an environment of higher vibrations, elevates the racial soul and quickens its frequency, calling it to strengthen itself as a reaction to the changes it is subject to. Thus, so far is sexual activity considered, not as in Abrahamic religion a mere mechanical means for the conception or incarnation of souls upon the earth, nor as a sin perpetuated against the Lord, but rather a tool of empowerment for the expansion and advancement of the racial soul. In terms of conduct with women, one must play the role of the traditional man, a defender and protector and provider. However, some qualifications must obtain, as the world in its current form is not a world of tradition, but a degenerated product of the cycles of time, of the demiurge, and the ensuing chaos of the evil tide, of an ever-increasing density of involution. Thus his options in terms of spiritual virility and the ability to form a spiritually heightened bond with an appropriate woman are admittedly limited, and this for the following reasons. 1. The bodies, minds and souls of the right parenthesis are debased and degenerated. They are products of involution, of the interspecial breeding, are immersed in the cloaca gentium of the multicultured stew and partake of a racial soul which has become lowered in its vibrational frequency owing to the ungodly combination of disparate demographics that have no correspondence with one another, and are therefore incompatible, creating what Hitler called the folk chaoses. Add to this debasement of cacophony the perpetual pollution of air, water and food, and the pollution of the ether with electromagnetic fields generated for the purpose of causing harm to the population, and the result is an environment not conducive to nearly as great a spiritual development as previously during prior epochs in time. Nonetheless, one must do his utmost to realize an approximation of a traditional form of life, and where women are concerned, this means, to the extent of his ability, to protect and defend his race from both external and especially internal threats. In terms of being a provider, this is a great difficulty, for, should one have the means, the women he might be able to deal with, the probability of any meaningful spiritual relationship with would be tainted by the dirt of filthy lucre, which adds a commodifying influence to the relationship, incorporating this as an element, and thus shifting any higher purpose that might be head towards a crude temporal one based upon exchange, upon social status cashed out in terms of the universal value form, thus inverting and substituting mammon in place of God. That the women are granted greater advantages in society, and that this is a result of Jewish intrigance of the latter's agenda of genocide and white male castration, means that there is minimal probability of involving oneself with a soulmate, meaning one of one's own nature, as men are artificially demoted, and women artificially promoted, thus destabilizing the balance of society, and creating the chaos desired by the Jew. Thus those who would attempt to embody the archetype of the traditional man are hard-pressed to possess the external qualities of a such a one. Landed estate, a family, etc. That the world order of Judeo-Masonry has completely undercut all of the ties to the roots of tradition means attempting to follow the path of tradition amidst the ruins of modernity is all but impossible, save as a mere idea and within one's own narrow sphere of influence. Nevertheless, from small beginnings great things come, and rather than simply staying hopeful, one must cease to hope and cease to fear, as Seneca said, and to simply embody the archetype, and accordingly one will magnetically attract to himself, whatever good luck he may, in the midst of the whirlwind of Jewish created chaos. Women thus play a role in this, and must adopt a similar archetype, that of the traditional woman, and must seek out and attract men of a similar nature, and this through attempting to live at a higher level of spirituality, and to employ their charms, to beguile those who are of a similar nature, and to reject those who are of an inferior, debased status, regardless of their worldly appearance socio-economically, which is more a marker of corruption, if any height is attained, than of a spiritual height. In other words, they must put aside their obsession to the extent they are at all capable of such with other recognition, and orient themselves around a more traditional purpose not confined to the conception and rearing of children alone, but incorporative thereof and directed towards a higher spiritual purpose. This is not to say they must reject any career prospects, but that they must place that in a subordinate position, put aside a life of selfish promiscuity and decadent hedonism as is so common in today's modern world, and pursue the heights for the betterment of their own race as a collective and themselves as an individual. That spiritual virility, one adamantine will, and an equally impenetrable exterior unaffected by the welter of contingency, is the goal necessitates further elaboration in relation to sexuality and females of one's own kind and of others. Perhaps at a near future point the scenario as played out, if the book ascribed to David Lane K.D. Rebel, may be a necessity with the kidnapping of women as breedstock, and indeed as soulmates, to relocate to safe spaces in the hinterlands. Perhaps at some future point also polygamy must be instituted, and a representation of the rape of the Sab in women, such as the spoils of war, and is a condition of survival inherently ethical, and since necessarily good in the eyes of God as means to the end of the survival, expansion, and advancement of his own kind. These acts and others such as the creation of Lebensborn-style enclaves may be a necessity in the near future, and whether this occurs in the current white-created multicultural cloaca gentium, or in areas clandestine and unknown such as out-of-the-way third-world countries will be purely a result of historical contingency. The females and their personal self-interest now under the current multicult regime are exalted as the height of heights placed, if only temporarily on a pedestal by the Jew as means of scapegoating women and liberals for the chaos they themselves have created, and this as a means of imposing their Zion despotism on the world. The females in the traditional man especially must recognize that the exaltation of women qua woman, or the sacred feminine archetype is folly, and subordinate their obsession with the female to that of an orientation towards the absolute and racial soul, of which they are constituent members. The false idol of femininity must be cast down, but not the concrete women who are in most cases its unfortunate dupes who have fallen for the lie of the purely worldly and profane sexualized goddess figure. In its place must be erected a temple to Aryan mankind, and to God and naught else. As to the females of the beastmen, they are especially an enticement on the part of Jerry, a snare laid out for the white man to partake of, and go the way of all flesh which detaches him from the heights, and drags him down to the mire with the beast folk, transforming himself like Lampwick in Pleasure Island into a donkey through cultivating beast consciousness in his trysting with the beast folk. Lampwick, the phallocentric male, has his consciousness rooted in the lower chakras and the base drives, and allows himself to be dragged into the hells through coupling with his pleasure dolls. As to the conception of children, this should play a significant role, but is not as imperative as the securing of the survival of one's race, and is not a necessary condition for oneself as an individual for the achievement of that purpose, as no breeding war will outpace the profligacy of the beast folk, and no amount of crude routings will elevate the racial soul to a higher level of being. The war for white survival necessitates men and women alike to fight against the enemy, to ensure their own survival, else all of the conception of chillens are doomed from the beginning, as they will never exceed the numbers of the hybrid animal races owing to the genocidal policies of the Jews. It would be statistically and physically impossible at the rate they are brought in and the numbers they conceive. Thus the fight against the enemy must occur prior to all other forms of action, and herein lies spiritual virility, the development of an adamantine will, and its employment against the opponent in the most effective way. Of course, this does not preclude the development of spiritual relationships with women and the conception of children, but this purpose is available only to those favored by fortune, and those not so favored must pursue other paths to victory or Valhalla. Materialism, the material world occupied by the Jew as the Wizard of Zion pulling the strings, and revealing an illusory simulacral reality, the May curtain behind which he conceals reality, is also occupied by the Suo, are occupied by the Jew as the latter's would-be slave master, the Aryan race. It is the latter and this latter alone who has a chance to escape the Matrix prison of Zion, as they alone have the divine spark, the spark within, and they alone have the ability to transcend the matrix of illusion that the Jewish black magicians and their Masonic cohorts control and manipulate to serve their agenda. The material world can be represented by the cube, which is the least mobile, most dense platonic solid, and which connotes the lowest density or dimension which constitutes the illusory reality, that most all dwell within. Those who have only beast consciousnesses or live within the third dimension, and are not able to exist at any other level. The Aryan may exist at this, and at higher dimensions, and yet it is how they live their lives that determine whether they will be pulled down into the lower state of consciousness and become, so to speak, ossified in lower density as Han Solo frozen in carbonite, only worse having one's soul atrophy through lack of strengthening, lack of challenges and the proper alchemical praxis that enables its integration into a diamond body, dense in permanence, yet dwelling at a higher dimension of vibrational frequency, having forged the soul in the fire of struggle and using willpower to overcome the countervailing forces that seek to pull one down into that lower density of materiality, and to feed off the soul energy, the astral parasites that Jews call angels feeding off the souls of their captive charges. Truly this is the fate of they who have fallen into a life of materialism, whose consciousness has become bound up with the five-sense reality, that is experienced via the conduits of the five senses, through which trap one in the world of illusion, of the matrix prison of Zion. Those who reject materialism to the extent of the faker, or the ascetic sever their own silver cord to the material plane, and simply bringing about their own destruction, such is the fate of all Christians and all of those who attempt to adhere to the right-hand path, in the conventional sense of the contemplative meditative spiritual practices without any active challenges, or any forms of self-overcoming, that challenge the higher self and that subject him to a necessary reaction against those challenges. This is the left-hand path, the Vama Marga, the one and only stairway to heaven, the former alternative being at best simply a life preserver, at best that minimizes damage to the self, and preserves the soul from the corrosive waters of Maya. The last recourse is the way of all flesh, that path pursued by the decadent materialist of today who wallows in these corrosive waters in his rubber dingy guzzling beer and gobbling fast food, while he watches the latest greatest propaganda on the portable Talmud vision. Such is the doomed earthbound soul of today's world, conventionally and nominally a Christian, but equally an atheistic liberal all one, all partakers of the wine of Babylon, and devotees of Mammon shackled to the cube by golden fetters, and dragging around this chain along their 9-to-5 loop of money-grubbing consumerism. The materialism of modernity will inevitably destroy itself, though its own crystallization and ponderous weight like a sack of gold coins crushing one under its weight. Smaug the dragon perched upon his belly of gold dripping his venom of greed waits for the expiration of the life force, while he imbibes their vitalphus in the form of their brow sweat, while they toil for their gleam of gold. Those who live for gold will die by its weight and forge another link in the golden chain which binds them to the material world with each day of drudgery they undergo unless they can transmute this gold into philosophical gold through the great work of hermetic alchemy. The passive contemplative life fails of its objective of transcendence. Only the left-hand path brings on it closer to godhood, immortality and the golden gates of heaven. Place. Concrete vs. soil. Temple vs. forest. The environment in which one dwells obviously has a great influence on the individual person and can make or break the person, situating them in a place that is appropriate for them and their prosperity, or in the place that is ruinous to their nature. The appropriate soil or topographical region, locus, environment, call it what you will, is an essential element in the creation of a higher type of being that can manifest their destiny. Indeed, all beings, be they plants, animals or other, require the appropriate environment in which to flourish, and those who do not possess an appropriate environment will fail in the realization of their destiny on the earth. The questions that remain are: 1. What is an appropriate environment for the white race, and its particular subtypes and individual person within the larger collective? 2. What environments nearly approximating this ideal environment are available at this time during the Kali Yuga, and if such exist, 3. Right parenthesis, how might they be obtained, and most of all secured, so that the enemy doesn't destroy them, or the whites dwelling on them? Only through the securing of proper territory, that enables the realization of the destiny of the white race collectively and individually, can the survival of the white race be realized, as, should they manage to dwell within environments which snuff out its vital force for a short time, it could hardly dwell there for a long time. 1. What is the appropriate environment? The writer defines an appropriate environment as that which is optimally conducive to the realization of the proper destiny of the collective and its constituent elements, that which optimizes its survival, expansion, and advancement. Such an environment for whites is one where the most individual liberty may be had to contribute to the survival, expansion, and advancement of the collective divorced from all external and internal threats thereto, viz. An environment that is a healthy equilibrium between sustainable and environmentally supportive technology derived from natural materials and the natural organic environment which pre-existed human intervention or presence. At the present moment, such an environment is not available, as the controllers of the world wish to not only destroy the white race, but the environment as well, as to establish in its place a global technocracy based upon violent technologies which violate the harmony of existence at all levels and dimensions. The imposition of an organic and harmful catagogic totalitarian system that leaves nothing but ruins in its wake and brings about death as its ultimate conclusion, the death of all organic life. Such a current system of slavery and destruction is inherently self-destructive, and leads to its own destruction over time should it be left to its own vicious existence, being unto death. Thus the right parenthesis of Jewish dominion is not an environment conducive to the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race, and for this reason must be destroyed, else the white race will be destroyed with it. Its existence is the death of the white race, and its death gives the white race a concerted life. An environment that is appropriate for the white race is that which enables a harmonious relationship to obtain between the pre-given natural world of organic life, the creation of God, and the white race, the children of light, the bearers of the divine spark who, should they live according to their proper nature, would be stewards of the earth, ensuring its spiritual upliftment and its maintenance according to the divine will. The self-development of the white race thus would go forward in step with the environment, not as today the self-destruction of both, through the white race having its mind polluted with the anti-natural creed of Jewish technocracy and crudely materialistic worldview. How can such a world be secured at this point? Clearly, the only approach is two-pronged. 1. Remaining within the system in an antagonistic relationship thereto. 2. Extricating oneself from the system and attempting to carve out the above-outlined Elysium on the backdrop of the current degenerated right parenthesis in the least degenerative and most redeemable low-C spaces, viz. The countryside and away from major metropolitan centers, in addition to any sources of potential disaster, natural or man-made, egg, fault lines, volcanoes, low altitudes, power plants, military bases, dense, non-white populations, populations heavily concentrated in enemy forces, areas of geopolitical instability potential or actual, culturally foreign areas, etc. Thus 1. Existing within the system to the extent effective in an antagonistic relationship to the system, and 2. Existing without in an antagonistic relationship to the system and attempting to create a sustainable environment for the survival, expansion, and advancement of the white race in the white race alone. In practical terms, this means attempting to sway opinion to create a positive impression in the community, and to build a network through involvement with trustworthy and healthy organic groups and individuals, attempting to sway their opinion towards an understanding of reality, to straighten out the white man's thinking regarding who's who and who's due, who the real enemy is, and not to continue to labor under the delusion of the system with its divisive psyops of left versus right, etc. Putting the crosshairs on the Jew is the biggest issues, as well as casting out breadcrumbs to lead them to the ultimate cause of the world's problems, and to implicate them as the greatest danger to the white race. The typos or space of today's world is that of the concrete jungle of the cloacagentium of the multicultural stew that simmers in the crucible of Jewish dysgenics and genocidal political praxis. One had best get out while the getting's good, else he may be melted down in the crucible once the race war begins. Once the race war does begin, there will only be a mad dash to apparent safe spaces, and the opportunity for any safety and security will for the most part be shut, and thus they will have no recourse for right parenthesis, as the breakdown of the system will engulf them as a morsel in the bubbling cauldron of the shit stew of multicultist modernity. Those who at this point have not made their way out of the cities had best do so, and those who are insistent upon staying had best prepare for a protracted guerrilla war, and for all of the poison, etc. A bunker mentality is necessary, and should one wish to be more proactive, he had best coordinate with a team and take out enemies in the most efficient way, else he had best stay entrenched in a defensive positions. The territory of whites must be secured, if the white race is to be secured, and failing this, a scorched earth will have nothing behind but the burnt-out relics of a higher world. Should any culture or footprints of the gods remain on this earth as a living legacy, the white race must secure its territory in defensible regions else the world, and everything on it will have no meaning. The state conception is nothing without a race, a mere idea that, however formative, is nonetheless a mere abstraction or system of abstract ideas connected with usually a mere semblance of logical rigor. The state form is a mold that purports to mold the organic composite into an intelligible form that corresponds to the idea and serves the interests of the state in the conception of fascism. In the conception of fascism, state proceeds, and indeed supersedes, race, which is merely a prima materia upon which it operates, and which it may incorporate any other elements into that are of a completely divergent stock, insofar as that stock has dwelt in the particular region for a sufficiently long period of time. However, though a state has only so great an influence in forming the personality of its members, and it is the organic basis of the personality that is the actual basis of any sound and sustainable state, as the state idea or conception is merely the result of the personality of either one or several and emanates from them, when the person emanates from God as an emanation of the divine will incarnate in the flesh. The state is not a function of itself, or an idea manifested form on high, but rather an idea in the mind of man, which can only indirectly be said to be an idea in the mind of God, and echoing in the minds of finite and fallible mortals, reified and made objective through their actions. The state must thus be considered a secondary matter, and not given priority over the race or God, as it is not entirely organic, but, should it be organically derived from the race and ipso from God, it is at least authentic for that particular organic collective at that time and place, and depending on its form leads it to glory or perdition. Thus a state's value lies in whether it is organically derived, and as an epiphenomena is suited to the organic collective which is its source, and its negative value lies in its failed correspondence or harmonious resonance with the organic collective. The former state is good and sustainable insofar as thrace is sustainable, the latter is bad as unsustainable. The former creates harmony, the latter inharmony. The former endures through time as existing in harmonious resonance with the collective, the latter spirals out of control through increasing entropy. Any society or state that is diverse in the sense of multi-ethnic is a cacogenic state, a state which generates ill consequence, negative chaotic outcomes from those populations who, being jumbled together and evoke chaoses, necessarily create conditions of unsustainable conflict. In today's modernist lunatic asylum of diverse multi-cultist state societies, the consequences of such promiscuous mixture is clear, and yet ignored by the moral majority of race-blind bourgeois hypocrites who sequester themselves away in privileges and condemn others to endure the harassment they are so fortunate by virtue of their birthrate. A true state that enables the development of the persons who constitute its members is that based upon racial homogeneity, as this and this alone can create from itself as an epiphenomenon a harmonious state, not being a function of the voc chaos of the multi-ethnic cloacagentium of modernity. The modern state is a result of historical contingencies, and thus is a somewhat organic form that has a population as its basis that formed nation, and which nation has been subject to the catagogic influence of the Judeo-Masonic cabal. The state as it exists now is merely a transitioning form that has imposed itself upon the pre-existent structure through the intertwining of Jerry with the indigenous white population, and which has created a slippery slope of chaos leading to the collapse of that prior organic state form. The thin end of the wedge was Christianity, and this brought upon the nation of the white race by force through the agency of other white nations themselves, spurred on by Jerry, led to the gradual deterioration of the race, intermixture and degeneracy. The modern state is thus an artificial projection upon the organism of the race, and has no harmonious correspondence therewith, but is purely an invented system of abstractions with only some roots in tradition, which has entangled itself with traditional as a weed choking out the healthier fruit-bearing plant. Such as the Judeo-Masonic democracy, which is merely a facade or mask behind which the hidden hand conceals itself, and which is used to beguile the mass of Goyim's false idol, and to inflate their ego, and make them think in their shallow ignorance they ever had any power or would, having hardly any power, to even take care of themselves beyond a purely primitive level of subsistence. The fallacy of the democratic system which defines late-stage modernity is that of a reliance upon mere voting as apparent mechanism of political power, and a delusional reliance upon the notion that there could ever be such a thing as representation of a group of impoverished and largely ill-educated people by a person and persons far removed from that station in life. This representative could serve as an intermediary between the people and the state, as if the state's operations were set in motion by the people in the first place instead of the people, being merely controlled and influenced by the organs of information which construct popular opinion and which structure the mind of the populace to agree or disagree with whatever policy or decision of their elected representatives. Such a recipe for statecraft is one contrived for inevitable corruption and disaster, as the hidden hand's motivations and goals conflicts drastically with the will of the more intelligent elements of the populace, eventually revealing the stack deck played with by the hidden hand as the latter came to understand they are losing a rigged game, and that there is no way to win save to upset the table and seize the stolen chips from their representative, our opponents. Even should the gullible masses not eventually discern the rigged game, the very playing of the game according to the secret rules of the cabal leads to the destruction of society, nation state through its internal corruption and ever-increasing downward spiral into ruination. The inevitable breaking point being reached, the consequence of civilizational collapse and the supplantation of the democratic regime by either a communist Zionist despotism ruled by the Jewish hidden hand, now finally having come out in the open as the despots of the world, or an organic state developed by and for the Aryan race in a sustainable and harmonious manner, a true new world order of the ages. Discipline and punish the liberalized society of today was developed as a reaction to the brutal, cruel and unusual punishment of the Judeo-Christian regime that preceded it. This natural aversion to the sadistic cruelty of Jewish Christianity on the part of the white population was used and perverted by Jews to accommodate the deterioration of their nations through enabling the useless criminal elements to escape their just punishment, and to swell the ranks of the criminals as so many termites in the strict area of the nation, eroding it through a low-scale criminality. Thus punishment and crime are not proportional in either case. In the case of the former Catholic Christian regime, the punishments were excessive, and were not in most cases attached to any harm to society, but were instead attached to any speech or texts and their creators, that called into question the absolutism of the Church, and the Jews who concealed themselves behind it, what was deemed heretical. In the case of the liberal regime, born as it was of Protestantism, a purely reactive formation, positing itself over and against Catholicity as freedom from the universal sway of Catholic structure, the laxity of punishment led to the unraveling of all social order, eventuating in the Jewish fomented revolutions of communism, Jacobinism and other variants of the ultimate conclusion of liberal principles, Eaglite, Fratonite, democracy. Thus both approaches as were in error, both extremes which destabilized the scales of justice led to a chaotic disequilibrium of discipline, undermining civic order and providing opportunities for Jewish subversion, typically by their proxies, the criminal underclass and mafia networks run by themselves. The case of Hindsequel America during the Prohibition era, and at the turn of the 19th century, when Jerry was permitted to gain entry on a mass scale under the auspices of liberty on Ellis Island, signified the beginning of the end for Aryan justice in America and its empire. Thus can be seen that Jerry creates disorder in order to establish an order of its own, which is if possible rectified by the remnant of Aryans, and this is then undermined again by the same termite Jews, and for the purpose of establishing an order of their own. The subversion of ancient Rome by Jewish rabble called Christians led to the gradual disintegration of Rome and the recovery, if only to a degree, of Italian power with the Catholic Church, which was nonetheless Jewish spiritually throughout its history, and hence gave birth to the abortions of justice such as the torture dungeons and burning alive of woman, etc. From thence the Jewish revolutions and Protestantism, and before this the Gnostic revolutions, led to the disintegration of Aryan order, and by the communist revolutions under Freemasonry to the further degradation of the Aryan society, always under the banner of the rights of man and freedom, freedom from the cosmic order of the Aryan race, and for the destruction of the same for the benefit of Jewish hegemony over the earth. Both excessive punitiveness and excessive laxity in no way conduce to universal order, but are both serviceable to Jewry, and are the inevitable suicidal tendencies of Jewish infiltration in Aryan nations, when adopted or accommodated by the Aryan. Thus a different path altogether must be discovered in terms of any discipline and pain, any law of vanity, that corresponds in any way to the will of deity. The form of this restriction of liberty, and this as an active curtailment of license as individual person, and as nations must at this time be developed in the person as a personal ethic, as there is no overarching structure which can furnish any vehicle for justice in the state as the latter is thoroughly rotted out through the excess licentiousness of the population and its handlers, the cabal of Jews and Freemasons who have reduced the population to the level of one of the goyim, an animalized product of a society of total destructive license and extreme laxity in punishment. A society where everything is permitted leads to a fragmentation of order, and the police and military will be a mere reflection of the policies of the state which are modeled upon the blueprints drafted up by the cabal, and manifested via their paid agents amongst the populace who act out their role in the theater of the real for the realization of the new order via their destructive processes. One must live according to the idea of cosmic order through himself, and this in opposition to the prevailing system which threatens this same order attempting to dialectically establish a simulacral order in its place, the Zion government by jury over all. Discipline of the self is thus necessary as well as a disciplined opposition to the enemy other of the system. The system seeks to ensnare and destroy via countless means the white race in this through not only its cultural destructiveness, but its systemic impositions on the slave caste. This discipline entails a total avoidance to the extent possible of all system entanglements, avoiding, exposing and condemning its cultural offerings, and so to its systemic snares, the strands of its spider's web, those being such things as lending in any way support for the system, voting, paying taxes, discussing its theater of the real, as if it had any truth or legitimacy. Total detachment and divorce from the system and society, and simultaneously a dwelling within in and at its expense as a means of attacking and undermining it in the most efficient and effective way. Discipline must then be concentrated with self, and directed towards opposition to the system. Personal empowerment and empowerment of one's own kind, and simultaneous disempowerment of the system and its agents. Punishments must be meted out according to the principles of cosmic law to all of these who actively support the system, and serve as its agents carrying out its genocidal policies. The race rate or white upper class are the major targets for punishment, and must be subject to punishment swift and sure, and is starting with the highest level targets who have the greatest negative influence upon their own race. After the dust settles and the white race has finally cast off the shackles of its enslavement, to jury and has cleared away all of those who have prevented it from realizing its own proper destiny, it may then re-establish its long-lost form of glory independent of the virus of Semitism, and create its own laws according to its own will, and mind as the mediation of the divine will. The law code of Manu combined with that of the Third Reich and fascist Italy adjusted for particular times and places, and people must all be factored into the realization of the system of cosmic justice in a particular finite form. Particular examples of personal conduct should illustrate the first steps along the path that will lead to the glory of the Aryan dominion over the globe, and will eventuate in a universal order of Aryan will and skill reflective of that of the divine. In one's relations with others he must invoke a morality that is particularistic and simultaneously universalistic, that is, in other words, hierarchical, beginning with God and ending in God and incorporative of man. Others are assessed in their nature, and dealt with appropriately according to their nature. Relations with the enemies of the white race, potential or actual, must be opposed, and their negative influence negated to the greatest degree possible. Relations to the system are entirely adversarial, and are undergone in the most clandestine manner, and in the most efficient and effective way. The person, the Aryan warrior opponent of the system, must present a mask of normality behind which must conceal he true face, and this in all dealings with the system and its agents to them. He is average Joe dash playing stupid is often a useful tactics as agents of the system overestimate their self-worth and underestimate the ability, the cunning of the goyim. Playing dumb has its advantages, especially in a system which is forever employing its panopticon vision to spy out paranoically upon the citizenry as Sauron casting his gaze from Mordor into Thesia and all points in between. In dealing with others he must assess them as allies or enemies. In the former camp are posited typically white men, and of these typically those having a more conservative character, and typically blue-collar whites, the white middle class. The whites who have a personality are also reachable, especially those of a more marginalized character, as illustrated in George Lincoln Rockwell's White Power and the example of the hippie who he converted to a Nazi rebellious whites. All Zionists and most all Christian as well as liberal fanatics are almost universally anti-white, as are the more affluent demographics. One must exercise great caution in attempts to approach others regarding racial activism as there are May agents in community policing that are paid to ferret out dissidents and to put the crosshairs on them for the police state to destroy once it is ready to preemptively strike out at its opponents. It is needless to say that all Jews and non-whites are enemies, and this on a biological basis, and this should be at most used when prudent. One must in short lead a disciplined life oriented around the principles of white survival and ultimitarian supremacy over the globe in all relations with others, and with himself first and foremost under the aegis of a universal order of God, and its implementation in the form of justice properly so called. All else is falsehood, and must be opposed or rectified from its fallen state, or negated as an incorrigible enemy other. Sports in one's journey up the mountain top, one must undergo the appropriate training to attain the peak, to become who he is in terms of an immortal soul which has transcended its finite condition through this means. Training is multifactorial, and must cover all of the bases that condition the person to attain a higher state of being beyond that of a crude beast. However, the training of the physical body, far from being a matter of indifference, or a satanic vessel of vice that is exercised in its vicious nature, is a necessary condition of attaining the height which can only be attained through a properly integrated mind, body and soul, and which can only be undergone through a taxing of the faculties, their proper exercise, that poses a challenge to the self. Climbing a mountain top in the spiritual sense, this may in fact entail the literal ascent of mountains such as was the favorite sport of Aleister Crowley and Julius Evola. Those sports or exercises which most threaten the self pose the greatest challenge to its stability, and the solicit reaction to that challenge conducing to a greater empowerment of the self of heightened awareness, which awareness occurs almost of necessity through that challenge. Thus such acts as gladiatorial competitions in the ancient world and battle or combat in general, and even their modern form of combat sports are challenges that necessitate a reaction on the part of the combatant, and conjure up the will to survive, and indeed the will to power for conquest and dominance. All sports which challenge the body and necessitate reactions and adjustments that develop the of dexterity and other of all the physical facilities are conducive to bringing one to the threshold of a spiritual virility, but not in and of themselves adequate to attain or perpetuate this state. The more bound the sport, the more complex and involved one's process of reasoning, the more ineffective in attaining the state of being one is, as his consciousness becomes as it were entangled in the processes of reasoning involved in the act of the sport, and this shifts away the mind from a greater focus, and the development of actually will through more elementary forms of skill such as in the combat sports, or in the classical Olympic sports. Those sports which necessitate the maximal output of willpower conduce to the development of control of the will most optimally as they relate to, and activate the actual faculties of the person in a way that is not scattered, but concentrated on a particular object, and through the proper coordination and employment of the body, mind and soul as a unit. The Jewish-created hedonist culture of sports and entertainment is devised deliberately for the purpose of shifting the consciousness of the sporting person towards all manner of superfluous ends that are bound up with the sport, such as petty competition with opponents in the achievement of a superfluous objective. Though the sport might have a consciousness-shifting function and necessitate giving 110% in the achievement of the objective, in some cases, in most cases, the sport is excessively bogged down with rules and other superfluities that render it a mere amusement. Though it may have a consciousness-shifting character, it is of a purely contingent and inessential nature. The additional commercialization of sports under the current regime of jury is a further product of its purely mundane hedonistic character as, like anything, it can be bought and sold, and confers at most only a fleeting benefit that has no essential properties that develop the soul in a sufficiently intense way that enables one to ascend above the material lower states of consciousness, and to situate one's mind in eternity on the summit of the mountain. The work Meditation on the Peak by Evola lend weight to the consciousness-shifting forms of sport that in the most literal sense place one's mind in the empyrean. Sports such as those which place oneself in control over the false self of the personality which is subject to challenges from without that threaten the self with destruction, and thus are optimally conducive to the development of an Olympian sovereignty over the welter of phenomena that seek to submerge one in the corrosive waters of samsara in the phenomenal world. The latter is the case of the Jewish-created and Jewish-distorted sporting venues which, entangled in a Gordian knot of rules, render them impossible as vehicle of transcendence as the consciousness focuses excessively on the rules not on the process of the attainment of the objective, or that the objective itself and the body, mind-spirit complex being the agent of the realization of the objective. Rather, that complex becomes tied to countless rules and rationalistic processes, and thus is dragged down into the purely human, phenomenal world and detaches itself from any higher principle or objective. The concentration and focus of the mind becomes shifted, undergoing minute focus on particulars bound to the phenomenal world and the rationalistic processes which distract it from any higher spiritual form of life, and thus, as a consequence, loses any capacity of transcendence, and thus sports in their current form under the baleful influence of furia, mere surcences accompanied by the allegatory panem in the form of skittles and beer, the body-destroying substances that the popular crowd indulges themselves in. Indeed, spectator sports are simply a simulacral form of action that takes always from the development of the higher mind, and will, as the experiences are undergone vicariously, and thus none who merely observes something from a modern stadium or ancient Colosseum can undergo the consciousness-shifting experiences that sports in their irredeemable forms assume. This is why the masses are served up these experiences as a means of bleeding off any potential aggression or vital striving, and channeling it as inserting a steam valve into their mind, letting off the part of steam of their inhibited and neurotic consciousness, leaving the body to atrophy and speed them into the grave according to the Jews' genocidal plans against the white race. Sports thus are only of value when participated in, and if observed vicariously as a spectator, learn from as means of subsequently participating in, and this only if they are conducive to the development of greater control of the will and its direction towards